Today, I'm joined by Stuart McLaughlin from Link Business Brokers, one of the DIA's partners. I spoke with Stuart about what makes buying a dry cleaning and laundry business an attractive option and how to best prepare the business for sale and to market it. Can you tell me a little bit about your background with Link Business Brokers?
I've been a registered business valuer and business broker for approximately 20 years. I came into this industry by virtue of my accounting background. I am a qualified accountant, even though it's not something that I use 100% of the time. I can guarantee you that every day I have to sit down and analyse profit and loss statements and inform opinions on the value of businesses, which is really important in the process of selling a business, getting it right from the start, making sure the business is valued correctly is really important. And it's often a step overlooked by a lot of business brokers without the skills of how to value a business. Often the result is a business that sits on the market for too long, and you go through a painful process of having to reduce the price, or very rarely increase the price, but certainly reduce the price to meet the market. It's much better to get the business on the market at close to the right selling point from the word go. Yeah. So my background is prior to being a business broker is in general management. But as I said, for the last 20 years, I've been selling and valuing businesses.
And we'll definitely talk about the valuation, because I think that's critical for our members to understand. To start off with, what makes a dry cleaning business attractive to potential buyers? Or I could rephrase that and say, are dry cleaning businesses attractive to potential buyers?
What makes a dry cleaning business attractive is probably the repetitive or repeat custom. Often when selling a business, I get approached by buyers looking for a business with repeat custom, even to the extent that they're prepared to pay a premium for businesses that you can actually substantiate as having repeat and regular custom. So I think that's probably the most important feature, regular and repeat customers.
Yeah, so they're kind of seen as a safe bet, because unlike if you owned a clothing store where, you know, fashion's cyclical with dry cleaning, you've got to get it dry cleaned, there's a sense that it should be easy to attract customers.
As I said, I think a repetitive custom is one of the key aspects of attracting buyers. I know when I recently sold a laundromat, I actually live in Newcastle, so you know, a lot of my experience with businesses is in this area. I recently sold a laundromat in the Newcastle area, and it attracted a lot of interest from people all over the country. To be honest, we had buyers in Queensland, we had offers from people interstate, and one of the main reasons why, and this probably doesn't apply so much to dry cleaning, but certainly with laundromats, is that they're perceived as being self-service. You could conceivably run them remotely. Again, I think a lot of your members probably have a laundromat service incorporated into dry cleaning, so that might be something they can relate to. Yeah, so that's certainly something that's attractive to buyers, is the fact that you don't have to employ a lot of staff in some situations.
And now I think about it, I wonder if that's an issue, because if people new to the industry don't understand the difference, I think, between dry cleaning and laundry, and certainly working in a dry cleaners. We do have some members who own the business but don't work in the business, but I would say that's rare, and most people
are working in the business and it is physical, you have to put the clothes in and out of the machine. You've got to spot them. So certainly, I guess from that perspective, dry cleaning is definitely more hands-on if you're an owner. And you need to make sure you've got the staff in the business. If you want to run it hands-free, you'd want to be making sure you've got good staff in the business to run it for you.
Absolutely. And I would assume maintaining the equipment regularly too, is probably very important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm a dry cleaner and I want to start thinking about listing my business for sale, what should I be thinking of to prepare myself and set myself up for success?
The financials is really important. Accountants are always very busy around June, July, putting your accountant on notice that you intend to sell your business, running up until that really busy part of the year. Buyers want to see up-to-date figures. So, putting your business on the market, around August, September probably makes sense in that you've got a reasonably fresh and current set of financials. One of the most important things is having fresh and current financial information and planning up to the point where you know that at some point in time in the future, you're going to put the business on the market and you've got all your advisors and team on standby to make sure that they can assist you through the process.
And what about the physical aspects of the business? So is it like preparing a house for sale where a lot of people, touch up the paint and make things look nice? Yes, the financials are absolutely key. But should you invest in sprucing up the shop before you're going to sell it?
I think to a certain extent, I wouldn't be making any changes just because you're selling a business. I often say to vendors that you should make decisions now as if you're going to be still running or still the owner of the business in 6 months' time, even after we've put the business on the market. So proper upkeep of the business goes without saying as something you should look at, but I would advise against making any major changes with the expectation that those changes are going to make the business easier to sell. I think you can continue running the business as you have. I mean, part of our role is to allow you to do that so that you're not dragged emotionally into having to deal with buyers. A lot of buyers, of course, don't have altogether good intentions, or not so much good intentions. They don't have the means or capacity to buy a business, and you don't want to get you don't want to get involved in them. That's our role, to qualify and make sure that you you can focus on running your business.
You've sort of touched on this, but how far in advance should an owner start preparing for sale?
Well, as long as possible, really. I think once you've made a decision to sell, though, on the other hand, you sort of become emotionally involved and you don't want the process to drag on. So, it really comes down to, to some extent, your personality. Are you more pragmatic? Are you a person that likes to plan ahead? Or once you make a decision, you're looking for immediate results? So that's hard for me to to determine, but on average, I would say if you plan 3 to 6 months ahead, I think that would probably be a good time frame.
And so you did mention about getting the finances in order. So what financial records or documentation are essential to have?
Okay, well, typically a buyer will want to look at 3 to 5 years profit and loss history, 3 years minimum, 5 years. Sometimes if there's a lender involved, a bank will insist on, up to 5 years, but look, 3 years should be fine in most cases. Other than that, the sort of information that we will ask of a seller are things like payroll reports. We want to get an indication of not just payments to staff, but how you're actually drawing a wage out of the business yourself, whether that's a market wage, whether we need to normalise the profit of the business. So a lot of the questions that I will have will be once I've actually seen the financials, looked at some of the line items that might be a little bit askew. One of the benefits of looking at information over 3 years is you can compare year to year. So if there's a one-off abnormal item, it normally stands out if you've got a three-year comparison. So in summary, I think 3 years financials, profit loss accounts, an up-to-date balance sheet. A balance sheet's not always something that we will share with buyers, but in an instance where it's a share sale, it's quite important that they want to look at all the aspects of a balance sheet, which is essentially the net assets of the business and what would transfer over to a new owner with the sale of shares in the company.
And make sure you've got any answers prepared if there are a few items that you think might a potential buyer might question.
Yeah, and for that, you might need to speak to your accountant and ask your accountant to normalise the profit and loss accounts. The accountant will have the best idea of where things, where some profit might be not necessarily hidden, but I think we all know what I'm talking about. I mean, sometimes there are some things that are one-off or non-reoccurring that your accountant will be able to guide you on.
And obviously lease documentation as well, negotiations or discussions that might have been had with the landlord, especially if the lease is up for renewal. And
yeah, well, that again comes back to timing of the sale. If you've got anything shorter than 2 to 3 years duration or expiry left on your lease, that could be problematic when it comes to selling the business. Buyers and their advisors will look for ongoing tenure. So it may well be that you either have to negotiate an extension to your lease or potentially a new lease from date of sale for the purchaser.
And the thing is with dry cleaning and laundry businesses, it is, I think, landlords would be happy to keep the leases in place because they're not the kind of business where you can just up sticks and go open in another place because there is a lot of equipment, it's expensive, it's heavy, and there's so you could expect that if you were maybe near the end of the lease that it might not be that hard to renegotiate with the landlord.
I've seen that firsthand with laundromats in particular. There's a lot of we call them leasehold improvements, but infrastructure associated with the equipment that would make it hard for a landlord to refuse. I mean, these are improvements to the property and increase the value of the property, make it very unlikely that a landlord would refuse an extension of a lease. Yeah.
Now getting to the bit where I think dry cleaners really want to know and the nitty gritty is valuation and pricing, because everyone wants top dollar for their business. So with dry cleaning businesses, how are they typically valued? Is it different to other businesses?
Not really. A valuation expert uses multiples of profit when valuing a dry cleaning business. The average valuation multiple for a dry cleaning business would be around about 2 to 3 times what we call seller's discretionary earnings, which is another way of saying profit before you've actually drawn a wage. 2 to 3 times seller's discretionary earnings, or around about 2.5 to as high as 4 times EBITDA, which is a fancy way of saying earnings before interest, tax, and amortization, which is amortization of goodwill. So 2 to 3 times profit for an owner operator or seller's discretionary earnings.
Yeah.
And 2.5 to 4 times EBITDA, which is profit after an allowance for an owner's wage.
This is actually one I'm just throwing in there. As we've just discussed with dry cleaning businesses, because they are equipment intensive, and it's a new dry cleaning machine is $100,000.
Mm.
Does the value of the equipment in the plant get taken into consideration?
Absolutely. That's why I've given you a valuation range and not an exact point, because where it fits within that range will depend on a number of factors, such as location and the value of equipment, the condition of equipment, where the business is in its growth cycle. You know, two businesses might have the same average profit over 3 years, but one might be on a downward spiral and the other one on an upward spiral. So obviously the one on the upward route would be the more valuable out of the two. Dry cleaning businesses, I assume they're not always, they're not 7 day a week businesses, Catherine.
Look, it depends on what state or territory you're in. So for example, in WA, no, they don't operate on a Sunday and can close early on a Saturday. Whereas in Melbourne, Sydney, there would be 7 day a week dry cleaners.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So the amount of effort you have to expend in the business to derive the profit, that's an important factor as well. Whether you have good management in place, whether you're able to step away from the business for periods of time. Often I consider goodwill as being how transferable the business is to a new owner, and that comes down to operating systems and policies and procedures, whether you've documented how you go about your daily tasks, you know, troubleshooting all the things that can possibly go wrong in your business, whether that's all been documented properly. You know, the effort you might put into something as simple as writing a policy and procedures manual will hold you in good stead when you go to sell the business.
And this is actually, your answers are kind of touching on my other two questions under valuation and pricing, which was what factors most influence the sale price: location, equipment, customer base, but probably more importantly, how can owners increase the value of their business before selling? I guess this is more a general business question. Some business owners out there, and this could be dry cleaners or any business, a bit blasé about selling their business, assuming, oh, yeah, I'll just put it on the market. I've had it for a long time, therefore it must be successful, versus those who do take the time and effort to put things like SOPs in place, make sure there is documentation. Because I have been speaking to someone who is buying a dry cleaning business. They're not from the industry and they definitely want to know about things like SOPs, emergency plans, you know, what the business has got in place already. And I think that's one of those things, you know, owners can go, I can't be bothered. You know, I've been doing it a long time. Everyone knows. But it sounds like it's worth taking that time to document that stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. Again, it comes down to transferability, how you make that, how easy or hard it is for that business to transfer to a new owner. And that can often have a bearing on how you may be required to assist during the transition process, whether you may need to stay on for a period of up to 3 months, I would say. And that often comes up during negotiation, transitional arrangements, what the owner's prepared to offer and to assist the business in its transfer to the new owner.
Actually, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I was asked recently by a member who is thinking of selling, how do they manage that expectation around how long they're meant to stay in the business for? Because with dry cleaning, it is quite technical. Training is almost non-existent apart from one training company in Newcastle, and it can take 5 years to be a competent dry cleaner. So someone did wonder recently, how long should they offer to stay in the business? Is it written into the contract? Should they be asking for a wage?
For most businesses, you look at offering an initial training period of 2 weeks between exchange of contracts and settlement. Exchange of contracts, similarly to selling a house, is when you commit to buy the business, or when a buyer commits to buying a business. And that enables you to introduce the buyer to the business, start the training, managing, you know, the transfer of accounts, setting up new accounts, FPOS, all those sort of things for the buyer.
Yeah.
So that 2 week period can be used very very well, and part of that 2 weeks also enables the purchaser to engage with staff. Employment terms on a similar basis to what they're currently on, and make sure the staff are fully on board by the time that they take over ownership of the business. So that initial 2 weeks can be used really well. Part of that is for training. And anything beyond that is by negotiation, and you wouldn't necessarily offer to do that without being paid. You'd expect some form of remuneration beyond that initial 2 week training period.
What are the most effective ways to market a dry cleaning business for sale? Is it like selling the house? That's probably the best analogy I can think of. Go to a few different business brokers and see what they're offering. I know a lot, it's one of those businesses where people probably like to try and keep it private. And I guess follow-up question, how do you get around that sort of privacy issue and not necessarily wanting people to know your business and what you're earning?
Marketing and selling a business, at one stage, buyers would almost exclusively buy a Saturday paper and look in the classifieds for businesses for sale. Well, that no longer is the case. That went many moons ago. People look online to buy businesses. There are many, many different platforms where you can find businesses for sale. We engage with most of those platforms. So that's a common way of advertising your business for sale. Writing suitable advertising copy, in other words, a good ad, it's important. Certainly, you want to not necessarily give too much information away, but you want to give just enough so that someone may be interested to go that next step further, which is to sign a confidentiality agreement. Part of our job is to qualify buyers, make sure they have the capacity to buy. A lot of people still aren't aware that you can't secure a loan to buy a business against the business itself. You have to have equity some other sort of credit facility to buy a business. So a lot of the questions we will ask about are to do with their capacity to buy. I remember many, many years ago, I had a colleague who usually interviewed a buyer and had three questions. Where is your money? How much have you got? And how quick can you put your hands on it? And often there would be a trail of people leaving his office looking pretty downcast, because it's a pretty crude way to go about it. But that's one of the most important parts of qualifying a buyer, is to make sure they've got the money. Otherwise, there could be a lot of time and effort spent and end up in disappointment. So marketing is about advertising in the right places. As business brokers, we've sold businesses in a similar or same industry, so that we have a database of people looking for businesses in that particular area, and we're able to market directly to them. So, and we do that through emails and targeted marketing, picking up the phone, ringing people, of course.
I'm just thinking, and I don't know if this is dry cleaning specific, but it does seem like a lot of them dry cleaning businesses sit on the market for a while. I guess A, why is that? And then B, how long should you stay with your business broker for when you might then maybe you need to think about a different approach to selling that business?
Yeah, I wouldn't be signing an exclusivity agreement for any longer than 6 months. I think that's more than enough to determine whether or not the business broker is working efficiently to secure a sale.
Yeah.
So 6 months, I would say, would be the maximum.
Okay, that's interesting because I know just anecdotally through talking with dry cleaners that there are some that are sitting there for a lot longer and it sounds like they're using the same business broker. And to me, it, with the caveat, I've never bought a business or sold a business. So to be fair, it's not my area of expertise, but I would have thought if you've decided to sell, if it hasn't sold within 6 months, you would just change brokers. Because with I know I keep going back to it, with buying a house, you don't, no one wants their house to be sitting there on the market for ages. And I think, you know, there's a, well, if it's sitting there too long, then people start thinking there's something wrong with the business, I guess. Why isn't it selling? Is this because it's overvalued? The owner has unrealistic expectations. Maybe there's something wrong with it.
Yeah, absolutely. All of the above. Coming back to the point I made initially about getting it valued properly, taking the time to prepare it for sale properly. A lot of business brokers are very much transactional in their approach, not pragmatic enough to step back and have a look at whether the business is properly saleable or whether anything has to be done to it to make it improve it without, you know, changing the overall way the business is run. There are sometimes some things that can be looked at, especially in the way the business is presented financially. As you rightly say, Catherine, I think it comes down to how the business is valued initially and marketed. And, you know, you shouldn't leave it any longer than 6 months, I think, to review how the broker is going about it, at least.
Are people generally unrealistic about their expectations for selling their business or what price they might get? Or do you find most their business people, they're pretty realistic?
Well, look, if I was a buyer and a business broker asked me what they want for the business, I would be running as quick as I possibly could from that broker, because they're telling you what you want to hear, and that's yes. not how you should go about it. You're engaging a broker, and for one reason, you're interested in his professional opinion on the value of your business, and obviously how he's going to go about doing selling it. So, first thing I say to a buyer is I don't want to hear what your expectation is. You need to hear what I think your business is worth. Hopefully we're on the same page. And if we are, we can pursue things further. And if we aren't, we have to discuss the reasons why. So yeah. For me, there are too many people, too many brokers in the industry who are, again, transactional in their approach. They just want to get the business on the market as quick as possible without preparing it properly for sale.
Yeah, because there's a cafe near me that's had a for sale sign in the window for months and months. Not that I'm looking to buy a cafe, but I just look at it and think, still hasn't sold. As if I wanted to buy a cafe, I'd be going, what is that? Because business isn't great. What's wrong with that business and why hasn't that cafe sold? So totally random, is it good to have a business for sale sign in the window?
For some businesses, you just wouldn't entertain it. Yeah. Others, you can. I mean, the issue is whether it stigmatizes the business, whether people will yes. look at it and say, well, it mustn't be performing, otherwise they wouldn't want to sell it. And that yes. can potentially affect the business. I would say probably that it wouldn't be advisable to put a sticker sign out in front of your business saying it's for sale for a dry cleaning business.
I agree. And it, because, yes, I look at this cafe and it's in a great spot, and, yeah, I just think, oh, that sign's still there. That's not a, that's not great that you haven't sold. Do you know of any specific buyer profiles of people looking to buy dry cleaning businesses? I mean, you did mention earlier that possibly people who are looking for a repetitive business. Is it an industry, I guess, that people are, seem to be interested in wanting to go into, or...?
From what I understand, during the COVID period and the impact that COVID had on the dry cleaning industry is that a lot of people learned how to work remotely from home, a lot of business people. I personally work from home a lot of the time. That's where I am now. So you're not dressing up in business suits. A lot of people in the business world have down-dressed or gone more towards sort of casual attire in their work. So that's definitely had an impact on the dry cleaning industry. I'm not quite sure if that's come back to you through your members, Catherine, but that's...
Absolutely.
It has, I think we're starting to see some sort of rebound or clawing back of some of the revenue that might have been lost, not just during COVID, but as a result of COVID. You know, people are probably aware of that. I mean, they'll see that when they look at the financials of the business. So right now, I mean, it's always on a case-by-case basis. It's easy to generalise across an industry and say, well, it's not the best time to be selling if you're in the dry cleaning industry. But there may be circumstances different. You might have, as a result of COVID, look to other ways that you can generate revenue, other things you can bring into the business, ways of differentiating your service, and that may have actually indirectly helped you. So it's always on a case-by-case basis. But
COVID certainly did a number on our industry. So we have a national mailing list of dry cleaners. So, you know, this isn't 100% gospel, but it was at about 1,100 businesses on that list maybe 5-6 years ago. Now we're down to about 850 nationally, and they're just the ones we know about. And there are a lot of dry cleaners who have their businesses up for sale and just walk away and close down because they can't sell them. Now, why they haven't been able to sell, I don't know, whether it's lack of interest or not pricing correctly, but there's certainly a big decrease, in the number of dry cleaners in the country. But then I think the flip side is someone in the training space said to me earlier this year, while it is a contracting market, it is also one of those jobs where you still need to get dry cleaning done and you can't outsource it to the Philippines or to India. It's a task that physically has to be done here, whether it's laundry or dry cleaning. As long as there's people still wanting, I guess, professional textile care or garments cleaned, there is a market there for people wanting to get into the industry. There is a market there. And, you know, some experienced dry cleaners would say, you know, there's a lot of bad businesses closed during COVID or ones who weren't doing well before COVID. It was just a death knell.
Some of the factors that could help, maybe you have you're able to talk to them now, Catherine, I'm asking your question, but the drop-off and pick-up system, is that something that's widely adopted through the industry in Australia, offering a drop-off and pick-up service?
Interestingly, it is, by the sounds of it, more of an American thing, and I do have a meeting, an interview in 2 weeks with a company in the US who are well known here called the Route Pro, and that's what they do. They're experts in routes, so pick up and drop off. I know during COVID a lot of dry cleaning businesses, because they were considered an essential service, So they could stay open, which was a double-edged sword because they were sitting there with maybe one item to clean in a day. But there were some, I know, in New South Wales, a member walked around putting flyers in letterbox saying that we'll pick up and drop off. So, but I do believe it is more of a US thing, and certainly something maybe in Melbourne, absolutely in Sydney, and in those metropolitan city areas, it would be a thing, but not as big as it is in the US.
Online presence, what generally are you seeing in terms of the way your members market their business, whether it be through websites, social media?
So most dry cleaners, well, I can only speak for DIA members, definitely have websites. And there's a couple of new members to the industry and to the DIA who are certainly thinking a lot more in terms of on their website, you can book in a service and being able to do things online and pickups and drop-offs. Certainly in terms of marketing, dry cleaning is one of those businesses where it is misunderstood. I didn't know anything about dry cleaning before I started with the DIA. Couldn't have told you what a machine was or how my suits were cleaned by a DIA member in Port Melbourne. And since then, I've become quite passionate about it. You know, it isn't just a case of someone walking up to a machine, putting the clothes in and pushing the button. There's a lot more that goes into dry cleaning than people realise. And I don't know that dry cleaners necessarily value themselves and their skills either. And there is a lot more we could be doing to promote that. There's some US dry cleaners on Instagram doing really good work with showing behind the scenes, and a dry cleaner getting a wedding dress that's covered in mud, cleaned and showing the steps. So I think there's more that we could do, the DIA certainly, to help our members show what they do and how they are experts. And you don't just get all those stains out of a wedding dress by bunning it in a machine, pressing the button. So slowly getting there, I think, realising that members are realising they've got to do more on social media.
What about the initial investment? If you're starting a dry cleaning business from scratch, what capital expense are you looking at?
Put it this way, because I do get people ringing me randomly in the office saying I want to open up a dry cleaners, we would always say don't. There's plenty out there. Buy one. Don't open. Because, I mean, a secondhand dry cleaning machine, I could only guess maybe $30,000 to buy. But, if you were fitting out one brand new, a dry cleaning machine, it's about $80,000 to $100,000. It's very expensive, and that's just one piece of equipment. Then you need a spotting table, you need presses, probably need washing machine, dryer if you're doing washing and laundry. Unless you've got a lot of money, it's a very expensive process. And we would just say, just look at one that's already operating, buy that instead.
Sure.
So, and yeah, there's lots of them out there, and that's why it was great to chat to you. It's interesting that I know a lot of dry cleaners have just walked away from their business, and I can't ask them, but I'd be keen to know whether it's didn't have the interest or were asking too much, but a lot of them have just found it easier to walk away. And I don't know our industry specific since COVID or other industries are the same.
Well, a lot of people are feeling it in retail, of course, at the moment.
Yeah.
Some very sad stories I could share as far as retail. Service industries, essential services, you would think would be immune to, online threat. So that's certainly something the dry cleaning has got in its favour. As we briefly touched on, to align yourself with online and people's habits of shopping online is good practice. In any service industry.
So what we do offer for members, so we do know that Google Business Listings are quite a powerful tool because everyone's on Google searching. So we will help members manage their Google Business Listings. So there's a lot they get reviews and they don't reply to them. So, and we have a lot of members where English isn't their first language, and particularly if a bad negative Google review has been left, we will help them craft a reply. So just to help bring up their online search presence. So when you're going for a, looking for a dry cleaner near me, with our help, we're hoping that those DIA members will come up higher on the search than a dry cleaner who isn't.
Apps are quite a new thing. Well, yes. Not really. I guess for some people they're new, but has there been any inroads made into development of an industry app or an app?
Yes, there are quite a few out there. And I guess the problem with that is, well, it's not really just apps. Maybe people who come into the dry cleaning industry think that because it is just, you just put it in a machine and you do it and it's done, it's easy to make money and to offer a cheap price, you know, doing 3 shirts for $10 and to undercut everyone on price. But I haven't been a dry cleaner, but in my 9 years with the DIA, people who come in with these apps promising, you know, to find you a, they do two things. They're either trying to hook you up with local dry cleaners, which is great, or they're trying to offer a service where they think they can just find you a dry cleaner and offer you a really cheap price for the shirts. And it just doesn't work that way, I think. A lot have failed thinking they could come into the industry and go, oh, yeah, it's just, it's volume, but, yeah, it doesn't work in our industry.
I think you mentioned earlier that you've had a couple of members go a long way into the process of selling a business and have things fall over at the end.
Yes.
What sort of feedback have you received from those members?
Some of them don't get as far enough, and it's when price starts being discussed. And, you know, I heard, oh, you know, this person wants to offer me that, but I want this. I think it's worth this. So that's certainly a conversation that I think needs to happen earlier in the sale process, and maybe a realistic understanding of what the seller can expect and the buyer should pay. Mm-hmm. The other one is then, as you mentioned earlier, the buyer goes to the bank. All of a sudden it's a problem to get the loan. So some do end up going down a vendor finance route, which is not, no one wants to do that. I don't know much about it myself, but I know the vendor finance is, some dry cleaners have just had to agree to it just so they could sell the business.
Yeah, vendor finance is becoming increasingly popular.
Yes.
In selling most businesses, for those that don't know what it is, it's basically you as the seller acting as the bank. You're looking at, you must look at what security you can obtain from the buyer in the event that they can't meet their obligations, their payments. Vendor finance will be typically staged over a 2-year period, 1 to 2 years, the shorter the better for the seller. And you'll most likely be looking at monthly payments. You should definitely incorporate an interest component into the deal, but certainly whilst it's something that you should be looking to avoid, sometimes it's not possible. Yeah. You know, if you want to sell the business, it's something you need to be looking at in a difficult market.
Yes, I know one dry cleaner, look, it was maybe 2 years ago, did sell with vendor finance, and another one is considering it but not keen to go down that path. But then if you've got a business in an area with not a lot of competition, no other dry cleaners, it might be seen as more attractive to do that vendor finance, especially if you know it is a good business.
But some of the other pitfalls, I guess, during negotiation is the transaction structure, whether it be an asset or a share sale. Share sale is pretty common with larger businesses, with where contracts are involved. Often the tax implications, the tax effect of selling a business by way of company or share sale can be advantageous to an asset sale. One of the first things you should do before selling a business, if it's a decent size business, is have a chat to your accountant about whether or not it would be better to sell it as an asset sale, which is more common, and certainly I would think more common in the dry cleaning industry, or a share sale. One of the first things you should do is just seek advice about the tax implications of the sale.
Assuming you have got a good business to sell and you've valued it correctly, how long would the typical sale process take from listing to closing?
The initial feedback and response is always key. You're always going to get, when using a business broker who's using traditional ways of marketing and advertising a business, you're always going to get most of your inquiry in the first week or two. When you look at your database and send notifications to all the people who have indicated they're looking for a certain style of business, you're naturally going to get more response as soon as you've listed a business. So, and what I say to people and what I believe is that it really depends on that initial response. If you can engage enough buyers early on, you can be looking at a potentially a 2 to 3 month timeline. If you haven't got that really positive response early on, it becomes hard to determine, really. Typically, if it's been well listed, well prepared for sale, you should be looking at a 3 to 6 month timeline.
Okay.
Best case scenario, 3 months, in my opinion.
Okay, so that's interesting. Like I've said, I feel like members have got their businesses on the market for a lot longer than that. So I guess the advantage of Link is you're national. You've got your national network of business brokers. Does that include WA?
Look, I think we've got a couple of individuals working over there. We haven't got an office per se.
Right.
We've got people, to my way of thinking. I mean, we are essentially Eastern Seaboard. That's where the majority of the brokers operate from. We have four offices on the Eastern Seaboard. A very big presence in New Zealand. In fact, that's where the franchise originated from, New Zealand. They dominate the market over in New Zealand. And we have interests in some other countries in the world, but Eastern Seaboard, we're very, very prevalent. Four offices, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, and the Gold Coast. So there's four offices. I think worldwide we have about 300 brokers. I think I read that recently. Right. So definitely the biggest business brokerage in Australia.
Thank you, Stuart, for sharing your insights on buying and selling dry cleaning and laundry businesses. If you'd like to learn more or explore opportunities, then reach out to the DIA team and we will put you in touch with your nearest Link business broker. Stay tuned for more interviews designed to support our members and industry.